Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Phenomenal Physics, a totally non-scary guide to physics and why it matters by Isaac McPhee. I picked this up at a school FATE, and it seemed sort of a good pricey for, say, a young student who's interested in physics to work out what it's all about. So I opened up it's published in 2016, and it says, all rights reserved, no part of this publication may be reproduced, stored in any retrieval system, transmitted in any form or by any means, electronics, mechanical, photocopying, recording, or otherwise, without prior permission. So I assume that this is getting close, but it's a sort of a commentary as we're going, a review. So they've got the front cover here. They've got this traditional Bohr atom showing bizarre picture, this most bizarre picture. It's showing the nucleus and an arrow pointing outwards, and it's got a an electron going from one orbit to another and a photon coming out of it. It's sort of, the proton for some reason has got an arrow pointing out. It's also got a prism, but it's more a pyramid prism, and it's showing light coming in, and I think from my understanding it's the wrong shape in that direction. And I've got here pictures which just make my eye. Electron orbits, see wave particle duality. Look, it'll be beautiful, beautifully sick. Look deep into nature and then you will understand everything better. Well, that's Einstein. Oh, okay, first page here. What is physics? Physics is derived from the Greek word physis, which means nature. Physics explores the mystery of how nature behaves, which is absolutely true. It is actually physics is applying to our universe. Physics explores the mysteries of how nature behaves. The purpose of physics is to ask every question that can be asked about how things work, and then search for answers to these questions. There are no clear limits to the scope of physics. It seeks to explain energy, matter, and how they work together. It investigates natural phenomena from the entire universe down to the tiniest pieces of the atom. The study of physics carries with it a wealth of fascinating mysteries, which makes it so exciting. And it's interesting what energy is that's taking in. It means work inside. So something's got energy, it's got work available inside it. And matter is Giles of Rome to really get into it. And here's a quote from Richard Feynman. To those who do not know mathematics, it's difficult to get across a real feeling as to the beauty, the deepest beauty of nature. I would say so. From quarks to quasars. So quasars are the very bright exploding galaxies at the end, and quarks are our subparticles of protons and neutrons and hadrons. Few fields of studies were larger in scope than physics. Within this all-encompassing science lie the answers to questions about the nature of the universe itself, its shape, its content, its history. Oh, I don't think we don't think it's got an external shape. By applying the same physical principles by which we look to the universe as a whole, we can gaze into the mysteries of the tiniest specks of matter. Oh, dislike that one. Because the tiniest thing is no longer a speck, it's a wave function. A physicist can observe light from distant galaxies known as quasars, the most luminous objects known in the universe, as well as the interaction between quarks, them almost unbelievably small particles within the atomic nucleus. I don't know why it's almost unbelievable. Physics lies at the root of all other sciences, except maths, of course. Maths, everything in the universe, whether or not it can be seen, can be reduced to the most basic physical laws. Well, that's the principle of universality, I think, is the opposite way around. Every field of study that concerns itself with the material world, chemistry, biology, astronomy, even engineering, is ultimately nothing more than physics. Chemistry is the study of chemical elements, their properties and how they bond together to form compounds. Biology is the study of living creatures made up of cells, which are made up of atoms. Engineering is the study of materials, strengths and forces. All three of these fall within the study of physics. Well, yeah. How physics is done. Oh my God, Father. Oh, they have an absolute horrible picture here. The study of physics at the subatomic levels has revealed atoms to be made up of even small particles, among which are six types of quarks. Six types of quarks? Oh, that's really bad. So, what they're talking, the actual normal atoms only have up and down. There's strange and charge, top and bottom. strange and charm, and top and bottom quarks. But that's not correct what they've written there. With such a grand scope, how can physicists even begin to answer all the questions posed by the universe? The answer lies in the fact that within physics, there are multiples of very specific disciplines, and most physicists today have taken up a very specialised approaches to their chosen field. These are just a few of the largest physics disciplines. Particle physics looks at the smallest things in the universe, atoms and subatomic particles. It's one of the most exciting scientific fields today. Particle physicists use both theory and experiments to explore the mysteries within the tiniest pieces of matter of the universe, seeking to answer questions about the origins of the universe and the basic building blocks of all matter. Astrophysics, also known as high energy physics. I don't think so. I think that's just wrong. High energy physics is, you know, accelerated physics. Explores the universe looking for phenomena such as stars, galaxies, black holes, quasars, pulsars, and supernovas. It applies principles such as relativity, quantum mechanics to objects in our solar system and beyond. By God, what about, oh, principle of relativity, I suppose, gravity, quantum mechanics, I suppose, nuclear physics. Nuclear physics uncovers the potential hidden within the atomic nucleus, helping develop new and more efficient forms of energy. From nuclear physics comes nuclear weapons, nuclear power, numerous advances in medicine, engineering, and even exploring our own history using radioactive dating techniques. Very interesting, nice that I put that there. Within each of these fields, physicists can generally be divided into two broad categories, theorists and experimenters. What a load of rot. Theorists seek to utilize the incredible power of very complicated mathematical tools in order to get to the bottom of physical mysteries. They use tried and true methods of calculations in order to take previous experiments and observations to generalize them from them, predicting future developments and finding better explanations of these phenomena that have already been observed. Experimenters seek to explore the physical universe by putting it to the test, using equipment as simple as a microscope or as complicated as a multi-billion-dollar particle accelerator. Experimenters must be clever, creative, and above all, precise. They are able to manipulate and observe the smallest bits of matter known to man and observe the farthest reaches of space with unbelievable accuracy, giving us all detailed, accurate picture of the universe. Experimental physicists throughout modern history have been on the cutting edge of technology, using the mental and technological tools at their disposal to provide new insights into the working of nature. Modern physics explores the paradoxical concepts such as antimatter, shown here, and shown here, black holes. I wouldn't call them paradoxical. Asking questions. Although physicists deal with the most perplexing concepts in the natural world, they must first learn which questions to ask. Asking the right questions can lead them to expose even greater mysteries, which is where discoveries begin. Physicists throughout history have begun by asking the most basic questions and then proceeded to delve deeper into the problems they uncovered. We can ask, as Isaac Newton did, what makes an object fall to Earth? The answer, of course, is gravity. Which is why the thing is that the label for what makes it, he didn't actually understand what it was. He just said, it falls to Earth, it's universal law, I'll call it gravity. It's just nomenclature. But this leads us to more questions. What is gravity? Why do objects attract one another? How does the force of gravity relate to the other forces we experience, such as magnetism? As physicists attempt to answer these questions, they are led to questions of even greater difficulties, and who knows where this particular one may end. Fortunately, most physicists today are not particularly concerned with finding an answer to every single question about nature. They are far more interested in throwing themselves into these problems and seeing just how deep into the hole they can go. The excitement of physics, like the great adventures, comes from unveiling even greater mysteries, and in physics there seems to be no end in sight. It's interesting, here you've got Kepler. It's only Kepler did I believe that he actually believed there was civilizations on the moon, and they built circular huts, which was the craters. A brief history of physics. Though the ancient physicists did important work in Greece and the Middle East, the studies of physics really became around the 16th century. The astronomical work of Nicholas Copernicus, Johannes Kepler and Galileo Galilei. I don't think Copernicus actually did observation. A new way of looking at science itself, observation, experiment, scientific reason, superseded the previously held biases and beliefs. I think you've got Galileo, but you've got Francis Bacon. It's pretty amazing. The 17th century Sir Isaac Newton changed the world of science forever. He improved on Galileo's work in mechanics, the science of moving things, discovered the law of gravitation, invented calculus, a form of mathematics with the modern theoretical physics depends. He inspired other scientists to believe that nature could be tamed, studied, and put to use. I think there was actually a story, just God wasn't just intervening everywhere. Throughout the 18th century and 19th centuries, Newton's work remained almost as important as ever performed, the most important ever performed in physics. Even when scientists like Michael Faraday and James Clerk Maxwell finally began to tame the phenomenon of electrical force, they did so within the confines of the physical laws that Newton had already set forth. Newton saw the universe as a massive mechanical machine, a clockwork universe, it's often called, that operates under a very precise, predictable set of rules. Understand the rules well enough and nothing would remain a mystery. As everything, living or dead, man or machine, has worked like a giant clock wound up at the beginning of time and set in motion either by God or by nature. I think they've just added that out. I think he believed definitely by God. But, okay, the 20th century, the famous survey picture. And it's really interesting to see it here because things are in focus and the things behind are out of focus. I wonder if it's been touched up. The 20th century. The Newtonian universe was shattered beyond all recognition by the 20th century. Albert Einstein, still young and practically unknown, introduced the world of theory of relativity in 1905. Things that Newton had taken as absolute, such as space and time, were now called into question. According to Einstein, time could speed up or slow down, and the object's length could be expand or contract along with a very fabric of space-time. I think they can only contract, mate. You can't. And time can only slow down. Yeah, that's the issue there. A decade later, Einstein would rewrite Newton's theory of gravitation, developing an even more perfect theory in which gravity was caused by the continual warping of the very fabric of space-time. A scientific revolution had begun. I would almost put that there. Gaussian law. Okay, the second stage of the revolution came in the form of quantum physics. Based on a relatively simple theory developed by the German scientist Max Planck in 1900. He just said there's a quanta of energy. Further refined by Einstein, Niels Bohr and others during the 1900s, 1910s and by the 1920s, the entire new system of physics shattered the notion of clockwork universe entirely. Godfather. The new physicists realised the world's utter surprise that exploring matter more deeply did not lead to more precision, as Newton must have hoped, but less. Where particles exist, nothing is determined, the notion embodied by Heisenberg's famous uncertainty principle. Just basically, you know, if only you could just sort of like, this is quasi-classical, because you can get quasi-classical with a bit of classical physics and Heisenberg's sprinkled in. It doesn't have wave functions. The rise of quantum physics led to entirely new ways of looking at physics and to new methods of performing calculations and making predictions. These new methods led to the discovery of some very peculiar things, the concept of antimatter, which is special relativity, and the relativistic Schrodinger wave equation, and the realization that even the smallest particles within atoms are made up of even smaller particles. Well, that one just come from quantum physics, mate. Our universe is filled with a mysterious substance known as dark matter and much more. Yeah, perhaps that's true. It's not filled, it's clumped. If dark matter was a uniform field, like the Bose field, we wouldn't know it. You know, the fact that it's clumped, it's causing problems. But perhaps the most important revelation is that the smallest levels of the universe is not determined. The behaviour of the particles are not predictable because their movements are based on nothing more than probability. Oh, this is so bad. Some people have likened quantum physics to Eastern religions or Platonic philosophy. Put it in the end, it is just one reminder that no matter how much we think, how much we know, there will always be mysteries yet to uncover the universe. No wonder, then, the study of physics is so fascinating. Well, yeah, I think you can write a whole lot of bullshit about complex numbers. Essentially, a wave function is a complex field. Well, they don't use the term scientists. The philosophers of ancient Greece, this is ancient physics, in its golden age, and those in the Middle East and beyond, prove themselves to be thinkers of the highest caliber. This chapter offers a brief guide to those brilliant minds who endeavoured to answer the many questions, the same questions that continue to drive the study of physics today. Questions of substance, motion, and our place in the universe. It reminds me of something. Thales. Now, Thales, be interesting to reread him. I just do remember, I think it was Plato or Archimedes said something. Thales was clever because he gave me the marker. A search for the first ever scientists, though until a couple of centuries ago they were known as natural philosophers, can only lead to Thales of Milet. 624 to 546 BCE. Thales was one of the seven sages of Greece and the founder of the first known philosophical school located on the coastline of modern-day Turkey, the Ionian city of Milos, from which it took its name. The Miletian school and students became a cornerstone of scientific thoughts. That's really interesting to see with that, because I remember reading about that. Thales and his fellow philosophers, most notably two of his students, Anaximander and Anaximenes, came up with the first theories of the material universe. The essence of their matter theory was the search of the quintessential material substance, what the Greeks called archae. By today's standards, their search was not a practical one. They were not searching for truth of matter so that they could better understand subjects like chemistry or biology of everyday use, but instead to look for a more philosophical approach. Top point, Thales considered that the essential substance was water, and the observation of water played the central role in the formation of all other types of matter. To Anaximander, the essential substance was the theoretical material called apeiron, meaning infinite. That's interesting. That is infinite. They got the infinite and the dot. To Anaximenes, it was air. At the heart of the Milesian theory, was the idea of change. If all could be reduced to a single substance, there had to be a constant and unstoppable change taking place within matter in order to transform one element to another. Within Milesian science, the philosophy first began intermingling. I just find that really upsetting. Okay, further contributions. Let's see, opponents to Thales. Parmenides. I love Parmenides. He's the one who has a golden chariot take him off to the sun, and this spooky stuff, saying there's stuff that you just can't work out. There's, you know, scientific logic. Believe that change is impossible, illogical and illusory. His ideas influenced other philosophers, Democritus, Plato, and Zeno of Elea. Zeno is a Stoic person. That change, it's interesting where that is. Zeno of Elea. invented the number of logical paradoxes to prove change was impossible. It was not until the development of calculus in the 17th century that Zeno's paradoxes could be finally solved. Marlis of Samos, 5th century BC, stressed the importance of believing the physical world as a constant rather than changing. He referred to everything that exists as the one. It's interesting, the change of that thing. Further contributions. Though the details of his life are cloudy at best, it can be said with some certainty that Thales was the first of a long line of prominent Greek thinkers. In addition to his theories of matter, which played an essential role in spurring the great debate that quickly followed on the subject, Thales was the first to encourage the Greek world to seek out the natural explanation for phenomena rather than seeking answers only from faith and mysticism. At the same time, he made great strides in mathematics, particularly in practical geometry, 3 centuries before Euclid would develop the first full system of geometrical proofs. As one of the earliest astronomers, he said that he predicted the solar eclipse that brought a halt to the battle between the Lydians and the Medes. The first series of matters, this is the Platonic solids, isosahedron, dodecahedron, hexagon, tetrahedron, cube, hexahedron, cube, octahedron. The first theories of matter. One of the questions dominate debates between the Greek philosophers and scientists in ancient times. What is matter? Yeah, it's different from mass. The thinker's desire to understand the physical matter means matter. Matter. What is the origin of things? A physical reality at both basic level, asking questions about the very substances from which everything was made. There were many elements which could combine to form matter, or was it just one? Was matter made from atoms or fluids? The atomists, the Democritus, did the most of his work between 440 and 400 BCE, though he's best remembered today for his forward-looking theory of atoms, which comes from the Greek word uncuttable, atome. He was known in his day for a laughing philosopher for the cheerfulness and optimism expressed in his philosophy, vast majority which is now lost. Democritus used the image of a sandy beach to explain his theory of atoms. Just as the tiny grains of sand can be viewed afar to look like a single substance, so all matter might be made of tiny little granules of matter. The smallest of these pieces, the particles, called atoms. Though we know now that there is some truth in Democritus' theory, his work was not so easy to accept at the time, especially by others. Apparently more logical theories existed. The first atomic theory would be neglected for more than 2,000 years before being picked up again by the likes of Galileo or Isaac Newton, and was not fully accepted until well into the 19th century. The elementarists. Most Greeks preferred the rival theory of Empedocles. He believed that matter consisted of just 4 primary elements, earth, fire, air, and water. Now, and of course, Aristotle added one extra, obviously. This in itself was not a new idea, but Empedocles developed it into an extensive theory. He saw change not as a rearrangement of tiny atoms, but as a mixing and separating 4 elements. These processes were driven by 2 opposite forces, which he called love and strife. The force of love bound elements together, and the force of strife took them apart. Isn't that beautiful? Plato's solid. The legendary Plato, or God, he's not a legend, he's real, born in 423 BCE, long after Eumenes' death, who advanced the theory of introducing the idea of Platonic solids. Plato was a master of deductive argumentation, beginning with a general point and logically narrowing his thoughts in order to come to a scientific specific conclusion. I have to say that's more... that sounds a bit more like Aristotle. Plato just wrote his dialogues. He tried to explain Eumenes' theory through the science of geometry. Plato looked at the four elements of Archimedes and determined that each of these might be represented by a geometrical figure, A, B, C, D, E. So he didn't use the dodecahedron for some reason. Plato argued that the four elements were not continuous substances, as Archimedes implied, but were, as the atomic theory, made of tiny invisible particles. These particles were geometrical shapes, and the sizes were peculiar shapes of these particles were the cause of the vast differences between the elements and the other, which is quite a good idea. Aristotle, what a jerk. Aristotle, possibly the most important philosopher of all antiquity, Aristotle's vast catalogue of works covered a prodigious range of subjects from biology, physics, medicine, and theology. While many of his works were filled with brilliant insights into the original research, especially in the areas of biology and moral philosophy, it was his unique ability to outline and clarify science as a whole that Aristotle's is surely the greatest impact on the course of physics in the Western world. A remarkable life. Aristotle was born and raised in the town of Stagira in the eastern Greek province of Chaldice. Born around 384 BCE. Does that make sense? So Aristotle was at the same time as Plato. So they've got good years. At 18 years old, Aristotle joined the Academy of Plato's famed School of Thinkers in Athens, where he remained for nearly two decades until the death of his teachers. Because of his time there, much of Aristotle's thinking was the philosophy closely resembles that of Plato, although he certainly went beyond his teacher on many subjects. Leaving Academy and the city-states of Athens behind, Aristotle travelled to Asia Minor, Anatolia, where he studied botany and zoology. He was soon invited by King Philip II of Macedon to become a personal tutor of his son, a young man named Alexander, later be known as Alexander the Great. There was that, he took one thing, there was another philosopher in the same island who did biology. I wish I could remember his name, very important person, sort of overshadowed from, the name escapes me. Aristotle's new student did not become a famous philosopher himself, but he certainly did have an impact on the whole of Western civilizations. Alexander. After the death of his father, Alexander took the throne and proceeded to conquer much of the known world. So great was the empire of Aristotle's prized student that his eventual death would cause great chaos and social upheaval extending throughout most of the Mediterranean world and beyond. The death of Alexander is seen by many historians as the end of the classical period of Greek history. DM Pericles, I thought, B. And the great age of philosophy in the 5th and 4th century BCE. Aristotle's works covered a vast range of subjects building on the theories on the past philosophers, while at the same time developing entirely new and quite revolutionary ideas from the ground up. He explored such things as the origin of the universe, light, optical phenomena, mathematics, biology. He developed one of the first systems classifying plants and animals, medicines, and much more. So venerated was Aristotle that his contributions to Western philosophy, even though his contribution was entirely correct, would remain largely unchallenged for nearly 2,000 years. Oh, I just got to remember who was the other philosopher. Can't remember his name. Isn't that so sad? Archimedes. Though many philosophers in ancient Greece preferred to questions of abstract theories, Archimedes was a scientist of the most practical kind. Oh dear. While others considered the nature of matter and existence, he attempted to get a better understanding of the world through mathematics and through the principles of simple machines, devices that took advantage of physical laws in order to make work easier. Oh dear. Now, some of these machines have been in use from the earliest days of human civilizations, but Archimedes sought to improve upon them by applying newly developed scientific mathematical principles. The practical philosopher. Archimedes of Syracuse, Sicily, was born around 287 BCE. Greece had at that time consisted of independent city-states, and Archimedes was citizen of Magna Graecia, the Greek-controlled region of the southern Italy today. Archimedes' father is said to have been an astronomer named Phidias. Perhaps it was from him that Archimedes received his unceasing interest in nearly every scientific mathematical subject. Sadly, Archimedes' brilliance could not save him from enduring the Roman invasion of Syracuse in 212 BCE. He was said to have been killed by a Roman soldier he had studied as he studied mathematics diagrams that he had drawn upon the dust on his floor. According to legend, the great man's last word were, "Do not disturb my circles." The sciences of Archimedes. The great mathematician Archimedes is known as the father of integral calculus. One of the first people to calculate the value of pi. He is best remembered for his discovery of the principle of buoyancies. This is a story. A new golden crown has been made for the king Hero II of Syracuse, but there was a reason to suspect that it had been made partly of silver rather than pure gold. Now, we now know that touchstones is the standard way you do it. Archimedes had to find out the composition of the crown without destroying it. The problem was that the density of the crown could only be calculated by measuring the volume and its weight. Yet, because the crown's shape was so irregular, no exact calculation of the volume could be made. As the story goes, Archimedes was taking a bath when he realized he could calculate the volume of this body by measuring the displacement of water in the tub. Realizing that he could use the same method to calculate the volume of the crown, the ancient god Archimedes leaped from the bath and ran naked through the streets, shouting, "Eureka, I found it!" Archimedes the inventor. As a practical scientist of the first order, Archimedes is known for his ingenious inventions, which include Archimedes' screws. The simple device consists of a screw-shaped blade and a hollow cylinder. When the screw is rotated, the liquid is carried from one end of the cylinder to the other. It's said that Archimedes invented the screw in order to remove the bilge water from the bottom of Greek vessels. It's still used today to drain flooded land and also irrigate crops. So bilge water is just the water that builds up in the bottom of the thing. Science in the Dark Ages. Let's see what time we are up to. We're 32 minutes. And we're in the next section. Science in the Dark Ages.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.